This is Carmen DeFalco on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Carmen and Yurko podcast, presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
It's Cap and Company. Follow us on the gram at Cap and Co. and ESPN underscore Chicago.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Thanks to you for checking out Cap and Company on ESPN 1000. Thanks to Brandon Kinsler, to Bobby Marks, to Chris Singleton. Show produced by Chris Bleck and Eric Ostrowski on the other side of the glass. And it's time for Crosstalk, brought to you by Hawthorne Racecourse. With sports betting on lockdown, fans are returning to America's original sport, horse racing. Download the Club Hawthorne app to wager on races from around the world at clubhawthorneapp.com. Carmen and Yurko are here. Hello, guys.
What up?
Good morning.
How are you, boys?
Bellas?
Yeah.
Good afternoon.
I'm glad Hoodie was trying to set Jesse straight earlier as we head into Memorial Day weekend. Yeah. Jesse needed help with his meat.
I do need help.
Yeah, you come on, Jess. I mean,
I'm a flipper.
Stop it now. You don't, what are you, Cap? You don't flip over and over and over again. You flip your meat once. That's it.
I know. That's what I'm wondering. What is the bigger issue? I know it's the wrong thing to do, yet I do it. Why do I do it?
I don't know. You got to see a psychiatrist about that. I don't know. You better talk to somebody. You're out of your mind.
And I'm standing there. It's not like I walk away. I'm standing there. I have a Jack Daniels in my hand, and yes. I'm standing, and I'm just flipping.
Oh, it's Jesse. You got to tie your hands by. You got to do like the Mick training here. Tie your hands behind your back or something. Flip it once. That's it. And the only thing worse than flipping it over and over again, and I'll never understand when people do this. They're standing at a grill and they've got their hamburgers cooking on the grill. Mm-hmm. And then they're taking the spatula and they're pressing them. And you're pressing all of the juice, all of the flavor, all of the fat, all of the goodness right out of the burger into the bottom of the grill.
I've
seen that cheeseburger. Yeah, I've seen that. Like, pressing all the goodness right into the skillet.
If you're doing it in the skillet, at least like it's not going anywhere. When you're doing it on the grill, it's just dripping through the grates. I'm a flipper, not a presser. Thank God. At least you got that going for you. That's the number one tip this Memorial Day weekend. If you're grilling burgers, don't press the juice, the flavor out of the burger. That's the point.
Man, I think Jesse just has an issue, Yurk, with, making
control
sure
or something.
You have a control issue, number one, and I've always known that about you. I mean, 25 years, you've always had control issues, no question about it. But nonetheless, the whole thing is that you have so much control and you want to make sure you don't get sick. You want to make sure it's cooked all the way through, so you're panicking. God.
I guess. I'm trying to figure it out right here on the air. 3 hours of therapy about this.
I think it's activity. The more active you are, the more you think you're actually doing.
There we go.
You've got to train your brain to do nothing.
Yes.
And by doing nothing, you're doing more.
Less is more, Yurko.
He's on the right path. I knew Yurko would have some good thoughts on
less
this.
Less is more sometimes, kid.
That's right.
Just let it cook, man. Let the fire do its work.
Also, I think that you are also afraid of burning. You figure like if I'm around it, you're afraid that you're gonna you won't burn it.
If you leave it on one side too long, you're gonna burn something like that. Yeah. Is that what you're afraid of?
I mean, not consciously, but that might be part of it. I think it's more of what Yurko said, but that's not a bad thought. But consciously.
Less is more.
Who burned you as a child, Jesse?
Hot water burned baby.
Who burned my meat?
That's on the next different strokes. Dudley and his meat being burnt.
Next week on a very special different strokes.
On a very special.
Mr. Drummond. Figures out who burned
Dudley's meat.
What are you talking about, Willis?
A very special. You guys, I know you're not going to give it away now, Carm, because you've got Odds Couple coming up, but I know you got the Open coming up. Any tips they can give us before we lay some money?
Which Open?
For the Mickelson.
For the golf this weekend? I don't know. Mike and I are going to talk about it tonight. I'll probably play a few of the props. I don't like laying – anytime you got to lay almost $200 to win 100, I mean, that's the how heavy a favorite Tiger and Peyton are. I don't generally like that. I also am struggling to find a way to convince myself to see see Tom Brady and Phil win this thing.
Yeah.
So I'll probably just stay away from that and bet some of the props. I actually like Phil and Brady. I'll give you one little teaser here, and we'll talk about this tonight. I like Phil and Brady in the prop to go one up first.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they come out and take an early lead. Maybe if it's on the first hole, Phil's normally a fast starter with stuff like this, and Tiger takes a little while to get going. Now, it's about even money. It's only plus 105. It's minus 125 if you want to bet Tiger and Peyton to go one up first. It's plus 105, so you get a little bit extra there.
I gave the opposite reasoning, and that was the fact that it's Tiger's home course. You think he'd be good early.
Yeah, but for Tiger, being his home course, knowing at any point he can probably just turn it on and go nuts. Boy, I've heard that course is brutally tough, too. It's a Pete Dye, Greg Norman course. It's called Medalist, I believe. Is that right?
Yes.
I think that's the name of the course. And I've heard Medalist. It is brutally tough. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if anything, Jess, he might just go out there thinking, I don't know if these matter much to Tiger until he's, like, pressed into it mattering on the course. And he's like, now I better get it going. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
I saw Nick Mickelson talking trash on Van Pelt two nights ago, just like, hey, we want to beat Tiger on his own course, so every time he goes there, he remembers us killing him. So, I mean, I think there's motivation on both sides. But I would think early you'd take the guy that knows the course, but, hey, you're the better.
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, you got to put into consideration is Manning is a goof. So is he going to take this seriously
right,
or not?
I think he's still a pretty big competitor, and he probably wants to be able to say, you know, he didn't beat Brady much. You know, obviously the NFC title game, the AFC title game in 06, but he didn't, you know, how many times, like, didn't Brady get the better of him more
he's
often
than not?
He's
a good golfer, too.
I've heard he's a real good golfer.
Yeah, he's a good golfer.
But, Yurko, knowing their personalities just on the course, who do you think would take it more seriously? What's that?
The dilemma is they want to impress the golfers. You're playing with, you know, the top two money earners all time in Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. So they're still kind of they're not in their element. This is the element that those guys are very comfortable on. You still want to impress the people you're playing with.
But not you, Yurk. I mean, you're out there with Furyk. You're just doing your own thing, right?
Hey.
My swing's even worse than Furyk's is.
If you can believe it. Jeez,
Jimmy and I'd be out there, and it'd be like the telestrator would be out going, well, this swing's going here and there.
Don't do this.
This is against conventional wisdom, but at the ball, they're square. You know, that's kind of crazy.
Somehow it works for Furyk.
Yeah. But they still want to impress guys. They want to impress the guys they're playing with. They want to impress Phil, and they want to impress Tiger because they're in their element.
Yeah.
When they're professionals and they're not professionals.
Good kid. You coming out to Jackson Park if it's opening up here?
If it opens up, kid. Listen, I'm at Walhalla right now in Whiting looking down the shores at beautiful downtown Chicago. If you can't find sand, well, and it's tough, too, with the raised lake levels to find sand on Walhalla Beach, too. Uh-huh. But come on down to Whiting, kids. Plenty of sand and plenty of microbrews.
Next Friday, I think it's going to be foursomes in Illinois, right?
Yes.
That's the plan.
Cart or no cart? Yep.
And it'll be you can take a cart.
Family member only.
That'll start family to speed things up. Considerably, because right now they're saying Merkin called, you know, on Monday for a tee time this weekend. Like 6:15 is the first at night is the first available tee time. You know, I keep saying this. I better do it. Like I was going to make. I haven't played golf. I don't know when I'm going to, but I was going to play at least 9 holes with my dad and my brothers on Father's Day. Like you better call now,
right?
To get your tee time.
Well,
you know,
but foursomes will be open, so it's not going to be that bad for you. Illinois is going to be open. Indiana's going to be open. Wisconsin's open, so you're not going to get a lot of cross traffic either.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
Yeah, I think you'll be okay, but I'd make a tee time on Father's Day now if you were doing it. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Like call
now. You can't do it that early.
Oh, you can't do it that far out
I think
yet?
Only 8 days in advance.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Depends on what course
that makes
you're
sense.
At.
Well, depends, you know, just
depends
wet my beak.
On what course you're
Yeah, wet my
beak.
Wet their beak a little bit.
Yurko, what's it been like playing? Like, what are the rules again at the hole?
Yesterday I played in Illinois, Glenn Woody. It was twosomes, okay? Everybody has their own cart. Nobody touches the flagstick. There are no rakes. There are no ball washers. So you're really just touching your clubs and whatever you got. You know, that's it. You wet your towel before you go out, and then it's got to take care of everything. yesterday wasn't cart path only. I thought it would be, but it's fine. It's normal golf. It's nothing crazy. You just putt with the stick in, which is what the pros started doing about a year ago or 2 years ago.
That's true.
So it's fine. The golf course is no different. If you get in the sand, you get into somebody's footprint, you just kick it out.
You move it out.
Stuff in the regular sand.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, that's not bad.
If I could kick the ball.
Well, you have to because they're not raking. They're not raking the traps.
You kick the ball all the time. You play golf, you look like Pele, kid.
Please, you look like Judge Smales and you know it. You got the foot wet. Why don't you improve your lie?
Yes. What a rule. You kicked it all over. You kicked it into the hole. I've never seen a guy 4 feet from the hole mark it so much that he ended up in the hole.
Like, wait a minute, Jesse, you just went from a 6-foot putt to a tap-in. It's like, how did that happen?
I take a lot of gimmies when
my marker's over here.
Hey, yeah, this guy goes down to – goes to Ben to mark his ball and then flips the quarter ahead of him 12 feet. Picks his ball up. So, oh, where's my mark? Oh, there it is. That's right.
He knows all my tricks. You're going to know all my tricks.
Shadiness like that. Oh, my heaven. But no, it's fun. God. Now, listen, Indiana, I'm playing Sandy Pines, which is down in DeMott on Monday for Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful golf course. It's got a sand base, so it can really absorb the water a lot better than these courses that are up here. We've got some creeks running through it. And, you know, they don't have a sand base in the fairways and stuff like that. So I'll go down there on Monday, and it'll be absolutely glorious down there.
York, I need to go out with you because it doesn't make any sense for the fat guy to be able to knock it down 225 yards and have no finesse with the rest of it. Carm knows
that's
that.
That's the hard part,
I'm great off the tee.
Oh, yeah.
But then the rest of it. See, that only, I don't
that's
have the
hardest
finesse.
Part.
Right. Yeah. I'm on the green. 100 in is where all your practice should take place.
That's it, because the touch from 100 in is like, that's going to make or break you, and that's the hard stuff for us amateurs, you know?
And then just working around the greens, because let me tell you something. I got a 7 on a par 3 yesterday. I shot 50. I had a quadruple bogey on a on a par 3. Okay? I had a 7. And all I did was shank 4 straight chips. 4 straight before I finally hit the face of the club. Okay? Hit the face of the club is how you should chip. Not the hosel.
Not the hosel.
Hosel's a bad piece of meat.
Not the blade or the hosel, York.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really when you watch the pros, too. If you ever go to these tournaments and you watch them up close, I mean, it's impressive how hard they hit the ball off the tee. Don't get me wrong. Easy to fall in love with that.
Yeah.
But they're scoring. They're winning. Because of how good they are from 100 yards and in. If they're not within 6 feet, you know, minus some weird lie or obstruction, when they've got clear shots from 100 and in, and they're not within 6 feet, they are pissed at themselves.
Yeah. If they tug it, they pull it just a little bit.
That's it.
Oh, they're beside themselves.
They're beside themselves. That's how good they are. That's where they're making, their money.
Think about us playing, off the tee. It doesn't really matter, right, that much. I mean, as long as you're going straight. But
you can make up
that
for
second
it.
Shot, right, the second shot's going to make up for it. It's that third shot that makes the game.
Yeah.
You know, you're whole. No doubt. I'm terrible at that third shot.
When they're around the greens, they're just.
It's like, and for me, I lose absolute confidence after hitting 200 yards off the tee.
Yeah.
The second shot. And then the third, fourth, fifth, it's like, well, what's the rest of these clubs? Why do I need them if I can't get it done?
Do you ever get to the point where you'd rather be further from the green, Carmen or York? You know, I'd rather be 115
sometimes,
than 85.
Sometimes. Like, I hate, though, actually. I hate the 115 distance, so I know what you're saying. I'd rather be 135 than 115 from the hole.
Well, that's kind of what I'm saying.
Absolutely. Agree.
Anytime you've got a tweener club, that's a problem, a tweener club. So
I totally agree with that, I've got 4 wedges in my bag. Like, what the hell do I have 4 wedges for? And that just gets in my head. I'm like, oh, my 115, that's my gap wedge, which I hate. And now I'm going to, and then I hit it 75 yards. I'm like,
so I've got the nightmare. I got the nightmare round going, right? Nightmare round going. I'm 47 going into the final hole. It's par 4.
Mm-hmm.
I drive the ball into a sand trap, take a 4-iron out of the trap, put it 15 feet from the hole, make the birdie.
Beautiful.
And that's what keeps you coming back.
That's right.
That one birdie keeps you coming back going, that's it.
That's it, man.
I can do it. It's there. The skill is there.
It's a crazy game.
It's the one hand in cards. You're like, boy, that was pretty good. Right. I'm coming back next time. That's same thing.
Golf reels you in, man. Yeah. It reels you in.
It's crazy.
The other par 3, I had a 6. Only played 9 holes.
Oh, damn.
I had a 6. Triple bogey. Put one in the drink. Why not? Who shouldn't?
Boy,
everybody should put at least one in the drink.
You still shot a 50 with a quad and a triple. That's not bad.
On the par 3s.
But still,
On the par 3s. I played the rest of it in like bogey and one par in there.
Not bad.
And then the birdie. The birdie's really nice.
Hey, this is the part of the crosstalk we ask, what do you guys got going? What are you guys doing?
Do you know what we're doing today? We're unfortunately, we'll talk about the passing of Jerry Sloan. It was sad to hear that. We are going to talk to Todd Hollinsworth at 1 about the players and the owners. I know you guys talked a lot about that today. The NFL proposed rule changes. I like what the Eagles proposed. Instead of the onside kick, we'll discuss that. We are talking to Dikembe Mutombo.
Merkin!
How about that?
That was my guest!
We're going to talk
Merkin
to Dikembe.
Merkin stole it from me.
Were you supposed to have Dikembe?
Well, that's a fine. It was insinuated.
That's a fine.
Come on, Merk. Explain yourself.
I don't remember this. I asked you if you wanted Sean Bradley.
Should I pull out my phone, sir?
Oh, maybe I did. Maybe it was.
He's been asking us to put on Mutombo for 3 weeks.
Yeah, you put me on the pay no mind list. I get Sean Bradley. I mean, the human spoon. But what about me?
We tried to have Bradley, and the phone sucked.
Boy, phone was brutal.
Merkin and I were watching old highlights of Dikembe. There's a sequence. I don't remember even who they were playing. He was in Atlanta. He blocks like 4 shots in a row, 1 possession. They keep getting the offensive rebound. And after, when they show they replay the whole video for you. They're showing you the baseline camera. After every block, Mutombo's waving the finger. I mean, he's literally doing it like rapid fire. He blocks a shot, he waves. He blocks the guy again, he does it again, and he waves the finger. It is so great. I mean, like, you got to love Mutombo. I mean, just he's one after another waving the finger. No. I mean, it is absolutely phenomenal. I love it. So that's at 1:30.
Guys, you have a great show.
And, have a great weekend, boys.
Merkin and I
you
have
too,
some
guys.
Issues because you know, this is not good karma for them to do
that's
that.
Not
right?
good karma. No,
that's not good karma.
Not good karma for you.
I get Sean Bradley. Got me waiting in the lobby. What's with that?
Thanks for the grilling tips.
Happy Memorial Day, boys.
Yeah.
See you
next week.
Be well.
Right. Flipping.
This is Carmen and Yurko. Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN _ Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
It's Friday, Memorial Day weekend. I don't know if it quite feels like Memorial Day weekend because of everything that's been going on, but hey, it's here. Slowly but surely, things are starting to open back up. Maybe you get out and you play a little golf this weekend. It's supposed to be pretty nice. I guess a chance of rain, maybe. But let's make the best of it. I plan to do a lot of grilling and a lot of smoking, Yurk. And remember, only flip that meat once, right? Like we told Jesse.
That's right. I'm going to get a smoker today.
Whoa!
Are there combination barbecues and smokers, Carm?
Yeah, like a green egg, I think, sort of falls into that category.
Yeah, I'm not getting that. It could be something else that we might get a smoker and a barbecue then.
This is a new development. I was unaware of this.
For the birthday for the young Nico turned whatever he turned 24 on May 16th. He wanted a smoker, so we're going to look for a smoker. And he's like, well, wow, we're there. We might as well just get a new barbecue. And
good for him.
I wonder if you can get a combination of the two.
Well, yeah, I mean,
the word is no. Like, I'm not getting a green egg. For me, it's the ugliest thing I've ever seen.
Well, yeah, but they're pretty nice.
I don't care.
Pieces of equipment.
It's ugly. They should have named it like the brown egg or the yellow egg or some other color, but that whatever the color it is.
I have a Traeger, and that can be considered a combination. I just don't grill with my Traeger. I only use it for smoking because I don't feel like it gets hot enough. It only gets up to about 450 or 500 degrees. And like when I'm cooking a steak or a pork chop or something like that, I like to sear it.
You like it at 900 degrees.
Yeah, I want it real hot because I want to sear it at first. So I use my gas grill or I'll use the fire pit. I've got a grill grate that can go over my fire pit so I can cook over that. I want it real hot. But, I mean, the Traeger, I love my Traeger. People sometimes knock that because they say it's cheating, it's electrical. I don't care. I've got young kids at home. I don't have all day to sit around, putz around with a fire. I got to be honest with you. Maybe someday when the kids are grown and I don't have as much to do and as much to worry about, I can sit around for 12 hours and worry about nothing but the brisket or the pork butt on my smoker and I can maintain the fire. But the Traeger, you plug it in, you fill the hopper with the pellets, and you can go about your day. I can take the kids to the pool and let my ribs smoke for 4 hours. You know what I mean? So
for me, it's a
great convenience.
Right.
Maybe Nico, you know, he's got time.
Maybe
he wants
more old school.
Maybe he is, and he can experiment
maybe he's
more.
Old school.
And he doesn't have to do that. He can actually get a genuine smoker that he's got to build and maintain the fire himself. More power to him. But
that's right.
I love my Traeger. That's all I'll say if you want to look into that a little bit.
He didn't start the fire, Carm.
He just is going to keep it going.
Here, at Home Depot, it looks like if you got $400, you can get both.
Oh, can
you? Two-in-one deal.
Two-in-one.
That's not a bad little deal. Yeah. Home Depot, sure. Yeah.
I love smoke. In the summer, I use my smoker. I mean, we grill constantly, and I use my smoker probably every weekend. I'll do something out there, whether
can
I'm making
I smoke
ribs
some
or
pork chops in there,
of course. Absolutely.
A little smoked pork chop.
I usually do like a loin if I'm going to smoke it more than a chop.
What end do you start smoking it with?
The burnt end.
I'm just joking. No, it's going to be fun. It'll be good.
Nico seems like Nico's got the demeanor to be a chef someday if he wanted to. You know, he's got the personality, he's got the attitude. He doesn't mind, you know, he can handle some tough love and some criticism. Like Nico DeMille would always made a good chef if he ever wanted to. If he's still looking for his direction in life, you know.
Yeah, any direction would be a good direction, Carl.
I think he'd enjoy that. Like, go to culinary school, you know? I mean, probably be a badass chef.
He takes instruction well.
It takes a certain kind of, I'm telling you, I've worked in kitchens, and it can be a rough and tumble place. It's not what you'd, not very human resources friendly, you know? Yeah. And if anybody's ever seen, I hate to reference this movie, but I'll reference it anyway. I'm not even remembering the name now. Charlie Trotter's in the beginning of it. It's the one where Julia Roberts is the food critic, where she's friends with the guy that is marrying the White Sox owner's daughter. You know which one I'm talking about?
My Best Friend's Wedding?
That's it. Thank you. So My Best Friend's Wedding. At the beginning of that movie, Charlie, the famed Charlie Trotter here in Chicago, he plays the chef in this upscale New York restaurant, and Julia Roberts is like the best, you know, food critic in town, and she's reviewing the restaurant that night, and he says, if you mess this up, I'll kill your family. Like that, like chefs are crazy. They're crazy. It's an intense, crazy place, and it takes a certain kind of demeanor to be able to put up with that, and Nico's got the ability to put up with that, so I'm glad he's going to try smoking his own meat, so that's good. You guys have a whole little thing going on this weekend.
Yeah, thank God he's going to try smoking meat. That'll be a refreshing change of direction.
Yeah, go. Oh, my God. So welcome in on this Memorial Day weekend. Maybe Yurko will give you his famous cocktail recipe for Memorial Day.
The swirl.
Matter of fact,
I'm thinking about going to make a swirl for myself now.
Well, it's Friday, Memorial Day.
Friday, you know? Yeah, why not?
I think the boss would be okay with that.
Oh, I'm sure. Hold on. Oh, I am the boss of my own house.
That's not what I meant.
I am the boss.
I meant our boss, Mike
Here
Thomas.
At the house, I am the boss.
That's true. He might be okay with that. It is Friday, Memorial Day
weekend. I started looking around my house. I go, what do you mean, the boss? The boss is sitting right here on the microphone, kid.
You know what I mean.
I know
what you're talking boss.
About. The boss boss.
Yeah, we're going to have a fun Friday show here. Dikembe Mutombo will join us in about an hour. Todd Hollinsworth in 30 minutes on the players and the owners in baseball and will they come together. You got a week until the end of the month, and that seems to be kind of the day when you know, you'd hope something is agreed upon so that then by June 10th, these players can start up a second Spring training 2.0. If baseball doesn't come back in 2020, whom would you blame? That was the poll question from yesterday. You still got 43 minutes to vote. Over 5,000 votes, Yurko, and it's not the result I expected. It's very close, but I thought for sure the players would win this. But no, 57.5% of the audience going with the owners, 42.5% of the audience going with the players. A lot of people chimed in with others, this, that, politicians, the virus. I mean, the virus to me, of course, that's got us to this point. But if you'd blame the virus if health officials came out and said, this is so bad we can't play. That's not the case right now. There are things in the works. And so when we polled this yesterday, it was more with the assumption that, yes, the virus is bad, but state officials, local officials are going to let these teams play. And if baseball doesn't play, it could be because the owners and the players don't agree on money. That's sort of what we were talking about here in the spirit of the web poll. I don't think in our discussions, blaming the virus is the right answer, but a lot of people did anyway, and that's fine. This is more take the virus out of it. If they say, yeah, you can play, go ahead, play your season. And baseball says, well, we can't because we can't agree with our players. That's bad. And that's a bad look. And that doesn't help the everyday man and woman and fan. It just doesn't, considering the environment in our country right now, economically and everything else. So that's what Yurko and I were talking about. And so we say, who are you going to blame, the owners or the players more? I thought for sure people would vote against the players and say, we blame the greedy players. But like I said, the owners winning the web poll if you can call that winning in this web poll, with 57.5%. You got 41 minutes left to vote if you'd like to.
I like that. That was solid, Carm. I'm glad I convinced you to put that on the old doohickey, the old Twitter machine, the poll.
Good work, Eric.
Yeah, I could have done it, but it would have meant that my hands would mash up my phone and get it all greasy, and that's no good.
That's no good is right, yeah. It's easier for me to type away on the keyboard in here.
It is, and you're much better with the English language also.
Well, we had our guy Alex tell us who or whom. So
that's right.
And glad we got that right.
Again.
Yeah. I had a feeling it was whom. I guessed right.
I'm ready, kid. If you NASCAR want this weekend.
Yeah, NASCAR this weekend. We got the golf this weekend. We'll talk about that coming up. There's some proposed NFL rule changes we want to discuss. 312-332-3776. That is the phone number if you want to get in with Carmen and Yurko today. 312-332-ESPN. Anything baseball, who would you blame? How do you see this shaking out? NFL rule changes. We'll talk about all of it. And Todd Hollinsworth will join us in 30 minutes.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Get Carmen and Yurko podcasts on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
I'd like you to meet a real inspiration.
Carmen and Yurko, ESPN 1000.
Number four. Swings from the rafters on the west side, Yurko, in honor of Jerry Sloan. Jerry Sloan would go on to be a very successful head coach in the NBA, and we were reacquainted with those terrific Jazz teams thanks to The Last Dance. Of course, 97 and 98, it was Bulls and Jazz, and Jerry Sloan was the coach of those Utah teams against his former club. Jerry Sloan, we've known for some time, has been quite sick, and he passed earlier today at the age of 78. A lot of fond remembrances and players speaking just glowingly of Jerry Sloan. And I didn't get to know Jerry Sloan all that well. Of course, I knew Norm Van Leer very, very well. And Norm and Jerry were reasonably tight. I mean, they never really hung in the same circle. But Norm had great affection and great more than anything, York, I'd say, and I think you know this, you know him pretty well too, he had great respect for Jerry, even though they were very different. They came from very different backgrounds. They lived very different lives, to say the least. But Norm had a tremendous amount of respect for Jerry. And I'm too young to have remembered watching that backcourt. I think those of us that grew up in Chicago certainly have heard the legend. And it was no joke from everything I've heard in the historians that they were about as good defensively as any backcourt in NBA history.
Tough country kid from Southern Illinois, kid.
That's right.
That's where he came from. Gobbler's Hill.
Yeah.
Down in McLeansboro, I believe. So, I mean, that's way down south, only in Sylvie country, I like to call it.
That's right.
Down close to Southern Illinois University. Yeah. Hey, country boy, he said he never would have played. I watched an interview this morning. He would have never have played basketball. His father passed away when he was four. If his father would have still been alive, he said he had never played sports. He'd have been working at the farm.
Wow.
In the morning up until the end. It's only because of the fact that dad passed, he was allowed to go ahead and play some basketball.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It's crazy.
I don't think I ever knew that.
Well, he said it today on an interview. It was very interesting. You know, an interview that he had done in the past.
Sure.
2016, he was diagnosed with Parkinson's and the onset of dementia.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I remember a little bit. I don't know how much they were available on TV, but you'd see highlights on the news, and you'd see, you know, Chet Walker was the guy for me, mm-hmm. Walker and Bob Love, and then you had two guards. So those were the guys that I really remember and that I really, you know, had a little bit of a focus on when I was a Ute. But then there was this tall white guy that was playing guard for the Chicago Bulls. So I only remember a little bit of it, and I was a kid in the 70s.
Isn't that amazing that they weren't even, the NBA just wasn't that popular, Yurk? I mean, you know, like you said, were they even on TV? Like, were all their games on TV? I think they were,
but I mean, I don't remember. The Bulls, to me, the first guy I remember with the Bulls is Tom Bullwinkle.
Yeah.
So they had to be on because I remember the ball goes into Bullwinkle or his dribble past the timeline. You know, that was the first things I remember. Like when I think about basketball, Van Leer brings it up past the timeline. I always said to myself, what the hell is the timeline?
What's the timeline?
I'm looking at the basketball court going, what the hell's the timeline?
And isn't it funny when you're a kid?
Van Leer over to Sloan, Sloan over to Love, Love into Bullwinkle, you know, that kind of stuff.
Isn't it funny when you're a kid, Yurk, and you're trying to understand all that vernacular? And it's almost like, for whatever reason, sometimes maybe you're a little ashamed to ask. I remember when I was real little, and you know me. I mean, I've loved hockey since I was 4 years old. I can remember being like 6 or 7, and I loved hockey, and I'd listen to games, and I couldn't quite figure out what icing was. You know, you'd hear Pat Foley and Dale Tallon talk about icing, sure. And I'd be like, what, you know, and when you, I just couldn't fit. And finally, one day I had a cave and just asked my dad, you know, and I think I might have even said, Dad, what's icicling? And he's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I said, you know, in hockey, when the puck goes down and then this sounds like it's out of slap shot, but it's not. I'm telling the truth. It's kind of like when the guy's explaining
and
it.
And they bring the puck on all the way back.
Yeah.
Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. Dad, why?
I swear I'm not stealing this from slap shot. Like, it's true. I couldn't for the life of me figure out, like, what made icing? What happened to the puck when it was icing? What is that? And so Yurko telling the story about, wait, what's the timeline? Like, right. When you're a kid and you're trying to work these things out in your head, it can be difficult, right?
You know, you could figure out, oh, they get the ball down into the block, you know? Yeah, you kind of figure it out because there's a block sitting there with that signifies where the guys line up on the free throw.
Yeah.
There's a little rectangle right there.
So you can
see
it.
So they get the ball down on the block. Oh, okay. I can understand that one. Sure. You know, the L. Oh, boy. He takes a shot by the L.
The elbow, yeah.
The L. The elbow. Yeah, that obviously short for elbow, but just some things that were always a mystery to me. But, yeah, hey, listen, Sloan was one of the best for the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah.
When that team was in its infancy.
That's right. I mean, they had some good teams in the 70s, right? Like, that 75 team is the one a lot of people talk about. That was the team that I think went all the way to a game 7, if I have my Bulls history correct here. That was the team that went to the game 7 against Rick Barry and the Warriors. Now, back then, the Bulls were in the West, so they were in the Western Conference Finals in a game 7. And I think the Bulls, like, blew a big series lead. They might have been up 3-1 in that series, and they blew it. And they ended up losing to the Warriors. And I want to say the Warriors may have even went on to win the NBA title that year. But, they, like, Yurk named some of those guys. They did have some good teams with Dick Motta back then. Norm and Jerry, of course.
Bob Love, Chet Walker,
Tom Borwinkel. God, I mean, 60% of those guys are gone now, Yurk.
Was Mickey Johnson on that team?
I don't know. He might have been, actually, or he might have been on a little bit later. That's a good question. I feel like Mickey may have been. I don't know. I'd have to check, Yurk.
Yeah, I've got the computer in front of me, but I'm just trying to remember the names that I remember when I was a kid.
Yes, Mickey Johnson was on those teams back then, Yurk.
Okay.
He was.
See?
You're right.
Mickey Johnson, yeah.
Yeah, boy, he was already gone by the time. I guess I remembered him then more when he was bouncing around the league a little bit in the early 80s. His Bulls career was over. Yeah, so sad to hear about the passing of Jerry Sloan. And I think every time I think of Jerry Sloan, I just sort of get reminded about Norm a little bit. They were kind of connected at the hip here in a way when you talked about the Bulls in that era. It was always Sloan and Van Leer and Sloan and Van Leer. And like we said, they formed one of the more formidable defensive duos in NBA history. Unfortunately, both gone now, and we send our best to the family of Jerry Sloan. The outpouring of support and affection from the NBA on Twitter and on social media today has been incredible. John is in Naperville on ESPN 1000. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. In the 70s, I was a kid, and we were handing out free stuff at the Chicago Stadium. Me and a bunch of friends who worked for the director of marketing, who was just a thin franchise back then. And I remember meeting Jerry Sloan and Norm Van Leer. Sloan was, you know, larger than life and gruff and all that, but Norm was super nice until he got mad on the court at the other players. But we were there was like 1,500, 2,000 fans tops. We would hand out the free posters and whatever their, like, calendars and stuff. Their idea of marketing at the time was not much different than it is today. And we just got to wander around the stadium, sit anywhere. The seats were wide open, and the teams were huge. You know, to us, we were little kids. But Jerry Sloan never had time day for. Norm was always really nice to us, would, you know, shake our hands or high-five us or whatever.
Jerry was Jerry, as I understood it, again, I didn't know Jerry Sloan. John, thanks. He was very quiet.
Sure.
Right? I mean, he was very reserved. He was very quiet. He really was like the polar opposite to Norm in a lot of ways, off the floor anyway, in the way they lived their lives. But, yeah, I don't know that he was, you know, Jerry just, and he was always stoic on the sideline. I mean, think about it. Do you ever even recall seeing Jerry Sloan, like, get too I don't recall many of those moments. He went about his business. He was still coaching and coaching quite well when I covered the league
right.
in the early 2000s. You know, for years, as the league was transitioning into much more of a players' league, Yerk, for a long time, sure. Larry Miller, the old owner of the Jazz, he'd get his team together every year and he would remind them. He'd say, "This is Jerry Sloan's team." He said that the coach will not go anywhere. I mean, it was almost like Larry kind of saw what was happening around the league.
And right.
He'd remind players, like, this is Jerry Sloan's team, and it's his way, and that's it. And that's the way it was in Utah. And, look, eventually everything starts to change. And I think maybe Larry's son took over at one point. It didn't end well for Jerry because of I don't want to totally bag on Darren Williams or blame Darren Williams single-handedly, but I think people who were familiar with the NBA at that time will remember that was sort of the beginning of the end, that he and Darren had a little bit of a falling out and some disagreements and differences on the way they should play. And, you know, eventually Jerry did leave, and it was something that you almost never thought would happen. But
right.
he was so successful, and he was a terrific coach. Like I said, they had some very, very good and competitive teams even after Stockton and Malone.
Right, 2011. Is I think the last game that he ended up coaching in.
Sounds
was,
about
that was
right.
the final season.
Yeah.
I want to name you a couple names here on the 74-75 Bulls.
Sure.
Names that you'll recognize. Matty Gukas.
Absolutely. I love Matty Gukas. Mm-hmm. I loved him. Now, he had been gone from Chicago, and he was a broadcaster, and we loved right. Matty Gukas growing up.
Yeah, and Rick Adelman.
Rick Adelman. Boy, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Rick Adelman, point guard.
Wow.
Sixth year out of Loyola Marymount University.
How about that?
Yeah, so I'm looking at a couple of these names, and I'm like, you're kidding me. Oh, that's why they stayed in basketball. Oh, I get it now. And Nate Thurman was at the back end of his career, 11th year. Nate Thurman was here with the Chicago Bulls also in that year.
Yeah, I remember Nate Thurman. Sure, Norm used to always talk about Nate Thurman, too.
Sure.
God, good old Matty Gukas.
Yeah, I looked at a couple coaches' names, and I just started laughing. I said, you never know where they come from, these coaches.
We'll try to grab a few more calls if you want to talk about any encounter or remembrance you have of Jerry Sloan, 312-332-3776. We will also do some trending. We'll tell you what's hot on social media when we come back next.
Carmen and Yurko.
Follow at Carmen DeFalco and at Yurko64 on Twitter.
On ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
The noon hour is brought to you by the Home Loan Expert. The housing market is about to really take off, so get pre-approved for your new home in 5 minutes at thehomeloanexpert.com. Odds Couple is back tonight. Mike North will join us in an hour, as he does every Friday, but Mike and I are back together after the hiatus here as sports slowly but surely starting to come back every Friday night. New time, 7 p.m. sharp, 7 o'clock tonight. Mike and I have Odds Couple. Luke Pergandy from Prop Swap will be with us. Jim Miller will give out some ponies. And then you'll get the encore replay tomorrow at 8 a.m. before Fred Huebner and Midway Jeff Meller. When we're done at 8 tonight, local programming continues. Chris Black, Adam Abdallah keep you company on a fun Friday night, getting you set for the long Memorial Day weekend. So lots of local programming today. We'll crosstalk with Waddle and Sylvie in about an hour and 10 minutes. Merck, let's tell everybody what's trending right now on social media.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, buddy.
What's trending brought to you by Trend Micro, the leader in cybersecurity, protecting over 500,000 companies worldwide. Visit trendmicro.com/ESPN for more info. So, before we get into trending, I've been meaning to bring this up all week, and the reason why I was reminded is that last night I saw someone on Twitter, a dad, say, "My son just asked me what Ding Dong Ditch is."
Yes.
Ding Dong Ditch.
Ding Dong Ditch.
And right. I sent a text to the group chain on Saturday night that my family got Ding Dong Ditched yes. for the first time.
It's happening again a lot now,
yes.
because my son's eight. Like, he and his friends have figured out what it is, and they have started to do that.
So it was a friend of my son's. It was the Rosen family. What they did is they rang the doorbell. We were watching, I don't know if you guys ever watched a show called All American. It's on the WB, and now it's on Netflix. Great show. You should watch it. And it's like 9:30 on a Saturday night. I'm like, who's ringing our doorbell? So I go look at the door, and there's a box of Ding Dongs. Outside.
That's not the Ding Dong Ditch I've ever
played. No, it's different.
That's a hell of a Ding Dong Ditch.
Yeah, so I was excited. But I waited. I didn't open the door. 10 minutes later, another they rang the doorbell again. So I'm like, all right, I'm figuring. So again, I went up. There's no one there. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to wait now because I bet you I'll catch him. So all of a sudden, I see a car pull up in front of my driveway, then turns his lights off and then backs up. And a kid Brett's friend Sam starts running out of the car, and I just start pounding on my door, screaming. Kid looks like scared out of his mind, runs back in his car, and they peel
out. That's hilarious. Yeah. It's in an era of Ring video doorbells, it's a lot harder. That was definitely a big thing when we were kids, though. Yes, sure. Ding dong did.
Right. So I had the ding dong still, so it's all worth it.
Well, that's cool.
No matter if they start playing ho ho ditch.
I'd take a ho-ho over a ding-dong any day, I got to be honest with you.
Well, that could be a very interesting variances on that.
I used to actually prefer, Yurko, the Little Debbie Swiss cake roll.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not against you, Carm.
Ooh.
I'm not against you. Little Debbie knew what she was doing.
Oh, I love
and
those.
And it was more cakey, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, that's right.
Carmen had a different and a unique flavor away from the ho-ho. And it almost felt like the creme inside was a little bit of a thicker creme as opposed to the light puffiness of what was in the ho-ho.
I smell a poll, Yurko. This has got to be a Twitter poll.
And what's your preference?
People won't be as mad or and hate as much probably on this one. This will just be for fun. I will put that up in the next few minutes.
What's
your preference?
The
Little
roll?
Debbie Swiss roll or the
Hostess ho-ho?
Got it. All right, it's going to go up.
I know what my preference is, Carm.
All right, I can't wait for you to vote.
Did you ever freeze the ho-ho?
No, never done that.
Oh, my heavens. That's a new treat for you, Carm.
I used to freeze Reese's Peanut Butter Cups and Charleston Chews. That was always my
freeze
preference.
Freeze your ho-ho, kid, and I'm telling you, good times.
What's your preference?
You guys ever freeze grapes?
Yes, actually, delicious.
Yeah, very good. The SEC announced Friday that athletes can begin using facilities on campus for voluntary workouts June 8th under strict supervision of designated university personnel and safety guidelines developed by each university.
Okay, that's the SEC.
That's the SEC, and they've kind of been ahead of the game in this.
They have been.
Yeah. Right?
Well, they got a lot on the line. It's the SEC. What is SEC football worth?
Is it?
Oh, boy, that's a lot of money.
You know what I mean?
More for individual schools and what the SEC television is and all that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, like Alabama, LSU, oh, boy, you're looking at big money. Like Vanderbilt's SEC, right?
Yes.
Vanderbilt football may not mean as much to Vanderbilt as it, you know, SEC football means to others. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kentucky, you know.
Robert Kraft's Super Bowl ring, the one where the Patriots came back and beat Atlanta, the Falcons.
Right.
In the all-in challenge, went for just over $1 million.
Wow. That's impressive.
God bless.
And somebody really wanted that ring.
Pretty awesome.
Well, you think it was Matt Ryan that bought it?
How great is that? Dan Quinn bought it. That should have been our ring.
Who's the coach of San Francisco now? Shanahan.
Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah. He could have bought it.
The Jets and Jamal Adams, Cap's favorite player, have reached an impasse in contract talks.
He's got a couple years left on his deal, doesn't he? He came out the same year McCaffrey did.
Right, it's on a contract extension year.
Jamal Adams was the same draft as Mitch. Everybody thought the Bears wanted Jamal Adams.
Right. So, you know, it's something that they want to get done. He wants to be the highest paid safety. Right now, Eddie Jackson is the highest paid safety.
Right. He'll play this year on his fifth-year option, right?
That's the advantage, though, of not being drafted in the first round. Because these players agreed to something idiotic in 2010.
Well, correct. For Eddie Jackson, did not have that deal.
The odds are your first-round picks are the ones that are going to be your superstars. So they basically allowed 5 years of control, if not six, before you reach free agency because of the, you know, especially if you're a great player. Now, it does guarantee a top-five money, but it just... beyond the point of ridiculous. Eddie Jackson gets drafted in the fourth round because he gets hurt.
Right.
He's a stud player, and the next thing you know, he's getting paid while the guy's not going to get paid because of the position he was drafted in. It's a little bit silliness and a little backwardness to the whole system, but you know what? When the players, they sign the contract and they say, okay, this is what we accept, guess what? You've got to live with it after that.
What else, Merck? One more.
One more?
Well, all right. A couple more, and then I want to talk to Ed.
You want to do birthdays later then?
You can do them real quick.
All right, birthdays. This guy is former White Sox hitting coach.
Charlie Lau.
Walt Reniac.
Right, Walt Reniac. And this man, they developed a surgery after, and it's still being done.
Tommy John.
This guy no longer has his quarterback, but he's a stud wide receiver who had a huge catch in that Super Bowl against the Falcons that led to Patriots to the win.
Julian Edelman.
Maybe the best tennis player right now in the world.
Novak Djokovic.
Yes. On this day in 1990, Andre Dawson received 5 intentional walks in a game, which is pretty crazy because he was at the end of his career at that point.
Didn't the Cubs do that a couple years ago to Bryce Harper when he refused to
change the lineup? And it sent him into a flux.
I think so.
We'll play. Go, you take the call, Connor. We'll play later. We'll play the. There's a great soundbite from Jason here talking about how Michael Jordan kicked out Pat Riley out of his suite.
Okay.
Okay. We'll do that later.
And the poll is up at Carmen DeFalco. What's your preference? The Hostess Ho Ho's or the Little Debbie Swiss Roll? So you can vote on my Twitter timeline at Carmen DeFalco. Ed's in Niles. What's up, Ed?
I've got a number of stories for you, but I know you're short for time. You're coming up on a break. I manage the property at Angel Guardian, which is now Misericordia. That was the practice site for the Bulls back in the 70s through 1984, Michael Jordan's rookie year. A number of Jordan stories. I'm not really a fan, but I'm really calling about Jerry Sloan. What a great guy. But a couple quick stories. They're on the practice floor. They had got beat the night before. Jerry's head coach, Ricky Sobers, the consummate you-know-what from USF, is refusing to play defense. He wants help and recover. Jerry does. He's standing mid-court. First time it happens, Sobers barely moves to help and recover. Second time, same thing. Sloan says, you better do it next time or I'm coming out. Sobers stood there defiantly, didn't move. Now, Mark File is in my office. We have a half door, half window open. So we're seeing everything and hearing everything. Mark File's sitting there. I'm sitting there. And all of a sudden, they start to drill. Sober stands and refuses to move. Sloan stands at half court, takes his ring off, takes his watch off, puts it on the floor, and starts walking towards Sober. I've never seen anybody run as fast, it wasn't a track star, as Ricky Sobers. Now, the only thing I'll tell you is the guy who had to run faster was Mark File, because the locker room the Bulls had was down the terrazzo. He locked it before practice, or I mean, as soon as everybody came out,
so he
didn't open it until practice was over. So he had to run down there. So now here is Mark File running, and Sober's running, and Jerry Sloan just keeps stalking along.
He didn't catch him, did he?
he could have, and it could have killed him. Now, second story.
Hold on, Eddie. We got to go. Eddie, unfortunately, we are up against the break, but God, good old Ricky Sobers. So that was when Jerry must have been the coach when Ricky Sobers was here. But that's funny. You couldn't get away with that today, but back then it was different, and Jerry Sloan obviously had enough. The quiet man said, now it's time to go, and I'm going to scare the living bejesus out of him. Yeah, it's sad news to hear about just how sick Jerry was at the end of his life these last couple years, and Jerry Sloan passed away earlier today at the age of 78. We're going to talk more about the players and the owners in this battle and if an agreement is going to get done and what advice a former player would give today's players. We will talk to Todd Hollinsworth when we come back next. We're back in 2 minutes.